And we certainly remember them, but we're grateful for those who are able to be here tonight. I want you to know, I was very pleasantly surprised and impressed this afternoon. We knew there were going to be a lot of folks out of town with the picnic being planned today. And as a matter of fact, when we were discussing it and our expectations for it and that kind of thing, we felt like we'd be perfectly happy if we had about 35 or so there this afternoon for the picnic. And we thought that'd be a pretty good turnout, especially with all the ones that we knew that are out of town today. We had 58 people out there today. Shay and I were counting it up after everything was over with this afternoon. We had nearly 60 there on a day when we knew we had a lot of folks out of town. And I want you to know just how much that encouraged me, how thankful I was for you taking the time to be out there, to eat my cooking and not throw it back in my face, to enjoy one another's company, and to just enjoy the afternoon. It was also great to see the some 25 to 30 kids that we had out there this afternoon running around and playing and enjoying one another. And we are grateful for the opportunity that we had. It makes it worthwhile to go through the frustration and the trouble of putting it all together and getting everything in the right place at the right time. And I know it's not always easy. Thank you so much for participating in that today. We had a great time, and we'll look forward to another opportunity when we can do it again. Tonight, we continue our study through the Old Testament, book by book, and we get out of the law. We exit the Pentateuch, the Torah, depending on what term you use for the first five books of the Old Testament. And we begin looking at the books of history this evening. And so we're tonight, open your Bibles with me to the book of Joshua. The book of Joshua. The book of Joshua is not quite as long as most of the letters of the first five books. It is only 24 chapters. And yet Joshua is really going to be a transition book. You know, so much of what we've read in Genesis through Deuteronomy has had to do with the law, the giving of the law, the keeping of the law, the reminding of the law, and all of those various things. And Joshua is going to serve as a transition from discussions about the law that is put in place to putting things in their proper place and the children of Israel getting to where they were expected to be 40 years previously. And so as we begin this evening, let's begin with the basics. We've talked about the fact already that Joshua is the first of the 12 books we commonly call the books of history. As we're going to see over the next few weeks, when you start getting into Joshua, from Joshua through Esther, is actually going to cover the better part of the history of the Old Testament all the way up until basically the time of silence. You're going to have a coverage of almost 1,000 years of history over the course of these 12 books that we're going to be discussing over the next few weeks. And Joshua is the first of these. It is generally believed, there's some discussion and discrepancy depending upon who you read and what they take as the timeline of things. But it's generally believed that Joshua is going to be written around 1350 BC. And this will be around the end of Joshua's life. If you turn over to Joshua chapter 24 and verse number 26, there at the end of that letter, he is going to state, "Now it came to pass after these things that Joshua the son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, died, being 110 years old." It helps if you get to verse 26 and not verse 29. Verse 26 says, "Joshua wrote these words in the book of the law, and he took a large stone and set it up there under the oak that was by the sanctuary of the Lord." Chapter 24, verse 26 shows us that Joshua was commanded to write these words. What words? The things that you're reading in the book of Joshua. He's going to write them toward the end of his life. But since the book is titled the Book of Joshua, it's worth our time, I think, as we begin this evening, to look at just some basic facts about the life of Joshua. Joshua is going to begin in the earliest times that we read of him as the servant of Moses. We first read of Joshua in Exodus chapter 17, where he is going to be one of those who is going to be discussed at Rephidim as the children of Israel are coming out of captivity. He is also going to be one of the 12 spies that is going to go and spy out the land. The indication seems to be that at the time that this would take place, he is probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 40 years old when these things transpire, which means he is the generation younger than Moses. Remember, Moses is going to lead the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt at the age of 80. Joshua is that next generation. He's at about the age of 40 when these things begin. Also remember that Joshua and Caleb are the only two of those that are going to exit the land of Egypt who are going to actually step foot in the promised land who were over the age of 20 when they left. At least as far as the men are concerned. There's some debate as to whether or not that verdict was just for the men or whether it included all of those that came out of Egypt over the age of 20. But certainly Joshua and Caleb are the only men over the age of 20 that will then enter the promised land. Over the course of time, Moses is going to change Joshua's name from what it was originally to Jehoshua. Jehoshua means in Hebrew, Jehovah is salvation. And certainly on the backdrop of the book of Exodus and the things that Joshua is going to do in leading the children of Israel into the land of Canaan, it is an appropriate name. Now, we generally know the name Joshua, as it's generally recorded for his name throughout Scripture. We know it from the Hebrew Yeshua. There may be another individual that you recognize that you oftentimes nowadays hear called by this particular name. He is the one in Greek whose name is Jesus, or in the English, Jesus. The name, English name Jesus is the English term for the Greek term Jesus, which is the Greek for Yeshua or Joshua, which is why sometimes old translators have had trouble with certain passages of Scripture. If you go back in the old King James Version and you go back to Hebrews chapter 4, in Hebrews chapter 4, there's a mention there of Joshua, the descendant of the leader of Israel, and yet the translators there use the name Jesus in making reference to that particular passage. And it caused confusion for some for a while as to why he was talking about Jesus when obviously it's talking about the Joshua of the Old Testament. That's the reason why. The names are the same. We simply denote them differently because of the origin of the language in which they come. Joshua, as I read in chapter 24, verse 29 a moment ago, will live to be 110 years old, which also tells us that from based on what we know, that it's going to be approximately 25 to 30 years from the beginning of the book of Joshua to the end of the book of Joshua. We're going to cover about 25 to 30 years of time. Joshua is going to pick up where Deuteronomy leaves off. Remember, Deuteronomy concludes in chapter 34 with the death of Moses. That's the final event that we're left with in Deuteronomy. Well, notice how Joshua chapter 1 verse 1 begins. Now, after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, guess how much time has elapsed? Next to none at this point. After the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, it came to pass that the Lord spoke to Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' assistant, saying, Moses, my servant, is dead. It's almost as though one book ended and the other one picked right up where it left off. That's exactly what it's designed to do. And so there's not this big gap between Deuteronomy and Joshua. Instead, the books come hand in hand right behind one another. And it is going to be for that reason that in Joshua chapter 1, you're going to have the statements made by God encouraging Joshua to be strong and very courageous because Moses has just died. And now, Joshua's in Moses' shoes. He says, be strong, verse 9, and of good courage. Do not be afraid nor be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. So what is the purpose of the book of Joshua? Well, as you examine the book of Joshua, the general purpose, the basic purpose of the book, is to tell the story of the conquest of Canaan and of the dividing of the land. As a matter of fact, the first half of the book of Joshua is going to be devoted, as we're going to see in just a few moments, is going to be devoted to conquering the land of Canaan. The second half of the book of Joshua is going to be devoted to dividing up the land of Canaan. Who's going to get what? What sections are they going to get? What are the boundaries going to be? Which cities are going to be given to the Levites? And so on and so forth as you go through the account of Joshua. Joshua is mainly a story of military campaigns where God fought for his people. You have three different campaigns, and these three campaigns are going to take place over the course of approximately 7 years. You know, it's not like the children of Israel walked in and within 3 months they had the land, everything was conquered, and they were done. The campaign to take the land of Canaan is going to last over the course of about 7 years. You're going to have the initial campaign, which will be the central campaign, where cities like Jericho and Ai are going to be taken in chapter 6 through 8. And then you're going to have a southern campaign that's going to take place to take the areas of what are known as Judah and those regions in chapters 9 and 10. And then the northern campaign to get the northern elements, areas that will later be known as Galilee in the days of the New Testament in chapters 11 and 12. And so it's going to be kind of a situation where the children of Israel cross over the Jordan. They come in basically in the center of Palestine, and then they sweep first to the south and then to the north to take the entire region. But then there's another purpose as well. In Joshua chapter 21, beginning in verse number 43, there God is going to make a statement through Joshua. And he says, so it is that the Lord gave to Israel all the land which he had sworn to give to their fathers, and they took possession of it and dwelt in it. The Lord gave them rest all around according to all that he had sworn to their fathers, and not a man of all their enemies stood against them. The Lord delivered all their enemies into their hand. Not a word failed of any good thing which the Lord had spoken to the house of Israel. All came to pass. One of the things you have to understand that is the purpose of the book of Joshua is to be the proof, to be the reminder, God keeps his promises. And these promises are not just the promises that were made to their fathers who came out of the land of Egypt. These are the promises that go all the way back to Abraham. That I will make of you a great nation. I will give to you this land. And you will have this land for your possession, for your people. It will be a promise that will be made to Isaac, to Jacob, to Joseph, and on down the line. And yet it's going to be a promise that is going to be fulfilled in Joshua. Just for the sake of a sidebar very quickly. Joshua chapter 21 verses 43 through 45 is very important. Because there are those of certain belief systems, most of all the premillennial belief system, who believe that God still hasn't fulfilled his promise to Abraham. that the promise that God made to Abraham is still in the future in its fulfillment. And so when Christ comes again and he sets up his earthly kingdom and then he's reigning on the throne in Jerusalem, then God will have fulfilled his promise. No. God said in Joshua chapter 21, he was faithful to the promises that he had made their fathers. And that with such, he gave them rest, and not a word failed of any good thing which he had spoken to the house of Israel. God did, he says, what he said he would do. So an important point to make from Joshua 21, verses 43 through 45. What's the outline of the book? How does the book break down? We've already given a little bit of information about the book, but how does it break down? Well, in chapter 1, you have the introduction of Joshua as the leader of Israel. Again, chapter 1 begins with the death of Moses, or with the information immediately after the death of Moses. And God is going to, in chapter 1, lay out Joshua as the new leader for the children of Israel. Did you notice in this that God did not leave it down to popular vote? He didn't give them a ballot with seven different names and say, Israel, you pick the one you want to follow. Nope. God chose the next leader of Israel. God knew who he wanted. He knew who had proven himself faithful time and time again. And Joshua was chosen by God to lead the children of Israel. In chapters 2 through 12, you have the conquering, as we've already mentioned, of the land of Canaan. Now, it's going to take about five chapters from chapter 2 through chapter 7 before they're actually going to take the city of Jericho. It takes some time to put everything in place, and there's a lot of detail that goes into laying out those things. But incidentally, some of the most fascinating material in the book of Joshua is examining what happens first at Jericho and then at Ai. You have the situation at Jericho. You have the sin of Achan in chapter 7. And then you have God delivering Ai in the second battle. There's a lot of fascinating things in the book of Joshua. But certainly in this area of conquering the land of Canaan, there's a number of accounts that we would do well to learn from. In chapters 13 through 22, we have dividing the land among the tribes. And I recognize, much as you might see occasionally in Numbers and various other things, there are some areas in the second half of the book of Joshua that are a little bit tedious to try to get to, especially when you start getting into areas such as Joshua chapter 15, and he says, so this was the lot of the tribe of the children of Judah according to their families. And the border goes from here to here to here to here to here to here to here. And they get this, and this cities for their area. And they go tribe by tribe through there. And we'll talk for just a minute why that is. It isn't so that we make sure we get caught up on our sleep when we're going through our Bible reading. There is actually a purpose behind it. And we'll talk about that in just a few moments. But then in chapters 23 and 24, you have Joshua's final exhortations to the people. And as we get to that section, before we go any further, I want you to notice the beginning of chapter 23, verse 1. And I know that most people know the statement in Joshua chapter 24, verse 15, where he talks about the importance of choose you this day whom you will serve. We all know chapter 24, verse 15. Let me encourage you to do something. If you don't get to anything else this week, if you don't read anything else from the book of Joshua this week, I want you to read chapters 23 and 24. These are two different addresses that Joshua is going to give to the children of Israel at the end of his life. Chapter 23 says, beginning in verse 1, now it came to pass a long time after the Lord had given rest to Israel from all their enemies round about, that Joshua was old, advanced in age, And Joshua called for all Israel, for their elders, for their heads, for their judges, and for their officers. And he said to them, the indication is it's been about 20 years between the end of chapter 22 and the beginning of chapter 23. Joshua is an old man. He's getting toward the end of his life. But you know, some of the greatest speeches that have ever been given and some of the greatest writings that have ever been left have been given by those reaching the end of their life, trying to reach out toward those who are coming behind them. And that's what you see with Joshua in Joshua 23 and 24. As a matter of fact, the very first words out of Joshua's mouth are, "I am old." But in chapter 23, he is going to remind them of what he has done, of where they have come during the time that he has led them. But then he is going to tell them, it wasn't me, it was God. Remember that in everything that you do. Then in chapter 24, he is going to once again gather all the tribes of Israel to Shechem and call for the elders of Israel and call for all of them. And he's going to remind them the ultimatum that they have. And yes, it's kind of that crescendo in verse 15 of the call to choose who it is they're going to follow. But if you go all the way back to verse 2 and you begin to read what it is that Joshua presents to them, he makes the case leading up to verse 15 that if they are going to do anything worthwhile, they have no choice but to choose the Lord. When he reminds them of all that God has done for them. Chapters 23 and 24 are extremely valuable and they're very important. So let me encourage you, as I've already said, take the time. They're not long chapters. I think they're about 20 to 25 verses each. They're worth your time to read and to commit to your heart. So when you go through and you read the book of Joshua, what are some helpful hints when it comes to reading this book of 24 chapters? First of all, recognize that the book is really two books rolled into one. We've already talked about this a little bit. That in the first 12 chapters, you have a history book. You have a book that records the taking of the land of promise. Of all of the promises that God has made for His people being fulfilled. And then in the second half of the book, you have an informational archive. And what I mean by that is this. You have, in the last half of Joshua, a written record of where the borders for the tribes are. So guess what? When there are tribal disputes over land in years and generations to come, they have a place they can go to find just exactly where the boundaries were. To find just exactly who got what and where it was supposed to be divided. Because remember, there's laws in the law of Moses that say under these circumstances, in this place, when the inheritance comes down, the inheritance, if nothing else, goes to the tribe instead of the family. Which tribe? Who's got what land? Where does it all play out? Joshua, in the second half, is going to be the informational handbook for the land of Israel in the generations to come. You ever gone to the library or to the bookstore and you go in the maps section and they've got that little handbook that breaks down exactly where everything is and what the land acreage and area is for it and how all the cities line up and all of that? Joshua is the land book. It's the notarized account of where the boundaries are for the children of Israel. And in the generations to come, that is going to be of great importance to the people. To be able to show what land was theirs according to their tribe. Or in the case of the Levites, which cities were theirs. Because they're not going to receive a land inheritance like everybody else. They're going to receive 42 cities scattered throughout the land of Palestine. So It is an informational archive. As you go through and you read the book of Joshua, you need to understand that while Genesis through Deuteronomy are the legal, they're the law foundation for the people, Joshua is going to be the historical foundation for the nation of Israel. And I'm making a distinction here. There's a difference between the people of Israel in one sense, the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and the nation of Israel in another sense. From this perspective, they now have a land. They have a place of their own to call home. You know, in the days before this, they were a nomadic people. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, they all moved around all over the place. Now they are a nation. They are a people with a land. They have a covenant. They have a law that binds them together and binds them to God. They have a complete system of government that is in place. Joshua lays the foundation for the nation of Israel. Beyond just the laws and the rules and the regulations, where do we live? What land do we have? And who are we as a people? It tells how that land is divided. And it tells how the land was to be handed down to the next generation. You're going to see a number of statements in the latter half of Joshua that are going to deal with troubleshooting areas of inheritance and how to deal with areas of handing down the land that you've received from one generation to the next. A lot of important aspects in the book of Joshua, but also as you read Joshua, remember that Joshua sets the baseline for everything else that follows with the emergence of the Israelite nation. Joshua sets the initial precedent. These were a people when they came into the land of Canaan and when they received their inheritance. Were they perfect? No. But they were godly. They followed God. They did what God told them to do. And they began setting a standard for what it meant to be the nation of Israel in the sight of God. Now, is it going to last forever? No, because it's not very long until you get into the book of Judges when you read, "Now after the death of Joshua, it came to pass that the children of Israel began to move away from God." Israel stayed with God through the life of Joshua and the life of the elders that worked alongside Joshua. But then man started doing what was right in his own eyes. We'll talk about that next week. But remember that Joshua is the baseline. What are some lessons that we can learn from the book of Joshua very quickly as our time is almost up? What are some lessons that we can learn from the book? Let me first of all point you to Joshua chapter 1. We can learn from Joshua the importance of courage and confidence. God calls upon Joshua to be strong and to be courageous. Joshua is going to have to deal with some things. Joshua is going to make some mistakes. You think specifically concerning the events that transpire over in Joshua chapter 9 with the Gibeonites and the treaty that he makes there without consulting God with this people in Canaan because they tricked him into thinking they were travelers from a far country. And God says, "I told you." And yet Joshua doesn't quit. He doesn't give up. He doesn't throw a pity party. He does the best that he can to make it right, and he keeps on trucking. We see in Joshua the importance of courage. You know, even when God is with us, even when God is on our side, it requires courage to do what you're supposed to do. It requires confidence to be what you're supposed to be. There are many to whom God said, go, I'm on your side. I can think of a particular generation just before this that God says, go, I'm on your side. And they say, I don't want to. I want to go home. And by home, they meant Egypt. It takes courage to do what is right, even when God is on your side. Because you still have to make the choices and take the steps. Secondly, we see in Joshua the lesson of God going to war against sin. The reason that God is using the children of Israel to take the land of Canaan is because of the great wickedness and idolatry of the people within the land. He is using Israel as a judge for these wicked nations. God has a strong reaction to sin. And the greater the sin, the stronger the reaction. And so you see in Joshua, God going to war against sin. You also see in Joshua, as we've already mentioned a couple of times, that compromise with sin brings disaster. You see it with Achan in Joshua chapter 7. When Achan takes of the treasures of the city of Jericho and God specifically told him not to. And as a result, when they go to battle in Ai, they don't know what Achan has done, but God does, and they lose the battle, and 32 men lose their lives because of Achan's greed. Sin brings with it disaster. We have a similar disaster that we see take place among the children of Israel in chapter 9, where God is going to send consequences to the children of Israel because of the things that they've done with the Gibeonites. God won't overlook sin. When we decide that sin doesn't really matter to God, we learn very quickly that it brings disaster to our lives. And then in the fourth place, God keeps His promises. We've already talked about this as being the important bulwark of the book of Joshua. But let me show you one more thing before we close this particular idea. God does keep His promises. But I want you to think about something. When you go through and you examine God's promises to the children of Israel, God told Abraham and told Isaac and Jacob that He would give them to their descendants all the way from the river Euphrates to the river of Egypt as the boundaries for their land. Yet if you take out a map, you look at the land of Canaan, while it does extend to the river of Egypt, that's not the Nile River, by the way. There was a river called the River of Egypt that was on the border of Egypt. The River of Egypt, yes, they reach. They don't come anywhere close in the days of Joshua to the River Euphrates. So how is it that God could say, I have done what I said I was going to do? Well, what happens is after 7 years of war, and after 7 years of taking the land over various campaigns, you know what the children of Israel do? The children of Israel go to God and they say, we're tired. We are happy and we are content with the land that we have. Let this be our inheritance. Let this be the land of promise. And just let us go home and build our homes. And make our lives. And you know what God says? Okay. I fulfilled my promise. You know, sometimes God shows a willingness to fulfill His promises, but limits it by our desire to accept them. By our willingness to accept them. Sometimes it's not a matter that God wasn't willing to, to do more or to give us more or to help us in a greater way. Sometimes we, like Israel, have gone back and said, you know what? Enough is enough. I've got enough. God, you've done enough in this particular instant. And I'm happy with what you've given me to this point. And sometimes God says, okay. God keeps his promises. But he is not so stringent in them that he refuses to listen to man. He hears us. And he listens. In the same way that he listened to the children of Israel. Was he there for them? Yes. Did he give them everything he promised? Yes. To the degree that they desired it. They were content before the fullness of the promise, from the fullest of the amount of the blessings were given. They were content. And so was he. Which is why he makes the statement in chapter 21, verses 43 through 45. I have done all that I promised to do. I have not failed to give any good thing. All has been done. Some great lessons to consider from the book of Joshua. But you know, as we close this evening, when you read Joshua, the book that bears this leader's name, he was a leader of more than just armies. He was a leader of more than just a people. He was a leader by example of faith. We talked about already Joshua 24 and in verse number 15. As Joshua reaches the end of his days, you think about a man who is a younger man, as the younger generation stands in obedience to God when nobody else wants to. Stands faithfully next to Moses through 40 years of complaining and crying and whining going on by everyone else in the wilderness. He remains faithful to God, and he remains the right hand that Moses can rely on. And then he takes up the mantle of leadership, and he doesn't get the big head, as it were. He doesn't get egotistical or power hungry or driven as Saul would in later years. He is humble. He is faithful. He is courageous. And at the end of his life, he admonishes those who will come after him by saying, you have to choose who you are going to serve. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. What is your choice? Who will you serve? If we can assist you in any way this evening, whether it be in obedience to the gospel or in coming back to him and being faithful to him and serving him the way he would have you to, why not come now as we stand and as we sing?